Welcome to the committee. Representative Grunhage moves House File 2282. We usually get the. Is this an author's amendment, the A2 amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. Okay. To bring the dates, just bring new dates to it.
Representative Grunhage moves the H228282 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The amendment prevails. Thank you, Representative Grunhage. Okay, so now we have the bill for us as amended. First of all, to get a lay of the land here, how many witnesses do you have on behalf of the bill?
Just one.
Okay, one. Anybody else wish to testify on behalf of the bill? Anyone wish to testify with concerns thereof? Okay, one concern. Did the department wish to weigh in on this one? Okay, the department will have their time also here. So very good. So, Representative Kale, welcome to the Tax Committee. And if you please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Steiner, who is my testifier today, came to me with a suggestion. And so without further discussion, I am going to let him talk about House File 2282. I can't even talk today.
As amended. Well, we'll let Mr. Steiner do that then. Yes. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
I'm John Steiner. I'm the Environmental Services Director for Polk County in northwest Minnesota. I'm here representing the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Solid Waste Administrators Association, and the Minnesota Resource Recovery Association in testifying for this bill.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. Brief history, this is a bill about the solid waste management tax. Since 1997, the legislature implemented what they call the solid waste management tax, which is a fee charge on the collection of waste, transportation waste, and disposal waste in Minnesota. 2016, the solid waste management tax generated over $70 million in fees. That's an increase over previous years, and that's an ongoing trend that fee continues to increase over time. The legislature has exempted payment of all solid waste management tax on materials that are set aside by the generator for recycling, reuse, or composting. That law is geared towards generator exemptions, and it does not allow for removal of materials after the generator would take that into account. In general, the disposal facilities where there is some additional activity that takes place is not exempt from solid waste management tax. So even if we were to remove materials from the waste stream after they've gone through the recycling programs, after all the different parties involved in the waste management system had an opportunity to remove it, the tax is still paid on materials that are not disposed of. We believe that... even though that has been documented, that we're reusing, recycling, and composting those materials, that's inappropriate, that's contrary to the intent of the solid waste management tax, and it's just poor public policy to be taxing for a disposal service that didn't occur. I believe that had the solid waste management tax been created after a lot of these facilities went online, which happened right about within months of the solid waste management tax being implemented, that likely the issue would have been avoided, would have been worked out when it was drafted, and we wouldn't be here today. And that's really the intent of the House File 2282, which is to clear up that inconsistency. The benefit that we see in the House File 2282 is it maintains the waste hierarchy and the existing public policy as relates to waste and recyclables. Generator still sees the same incentives to recycle. They don't see a disincentive to recycle. There are same incentives for reuse and for composting. So the implementation of 2282 would not impact the behavior of the generator or the waste haulers throughout the process. It also allows only permit facilities, which can be either public or private facilities, to be able to document the removal of those materials, and if the tax was paid on those materials, to be able to get a rebate or refund of those taxes paid for the disposal portion of the tax. One of the nice benefits to it is this doesn't create new programs per se. This is a result-driven tax or a refund of the tax. Basically, whatever you document is what the refund incorporates. If you're not successful, you're not going to obviously receive much in way of tax rebate. If you are, you're going to receive more. The solid waste manager tax rebate that 2282 proposes is just a small portion of the solid waste management tax collected. In 2016, the estimate was about $615,000 of refund would have been available for about 59,000 tons of recyclable materials that would have been extracted from the waste stream after they had not been recycled by the generator or anyone else downstream. And lastly, House File 2282 contains flexibility for the solid waste management tax law to adapt going forward to any new changes in technology, initiatives, other facilities, and would then therefore prevent having to take this up again at a later date. So with that in mind, on behalf of those groups, the Solid Waste Administrators Association, the Resource Recovery Association, and Minnesota Association of Counties, we would request your support for House File 2282 and hopefully correct this defect in the current law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. Questions for members for Mr. Steiner. Representative Hertaus and then Anderson. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure that I was able to find this information in what's provided for us, but my question is with regard to the tax that's collected, who's currently paying that? Is that the consumer in the waste fee that is charged on a monthly basis, or is this a tax that's imposed on the collection service itself?
Mr. Steiner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the tax is assessed to the generator, although it may be paid by the hauler for their services. It may be paid by the disposal facility for their services. But, yes, no matter who is collecting it and remitting it, it's billed to the customer.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you would characterize this as a net tax. You'd only pay tax on the stuff that you don't save or recycle or burn.
Mr. Steiner?
Mr. Chair, I would characterize it as the refund being only for the disposal portion that was not performed. You know, the collection, the container rental, if the generator failed to recycle it, set aside for composting, reuse it, they still use those services that were subject to the tax. And so they would be paying that tax. That would still be kept by the state. But the disposal action did not occur, and that would be the portion going back to the entity that caused that disposal action not to occur.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that some cities collect as well, but if I am understanding this correctly, this would only apply to counties. Do you know if some cities do this, and are you open to having this apply to cities as well?
Mr. Steiner?
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, it doesn't matter whether it's a city that collects it, the county that collects it, or a private entity that collects it. That doesn't matter. The generator is the one that gets charged the tax, regardless of who is providing the service, whether it's public or private, county or city. So the generator pays for all that. Usually their bills also include at some point, whether it's at the disposal facility by the hauler, the portion that relates to the disposal. And so the generator sees no difference in it. They're the ones elected not to recycle it, to reuse it, or compost it. They made that decision, so we're not changing the incentives for them one way or the other by this bill. So the only thing that would occur is the savings of the disposal by the party that caused the disposal not to occur. And that could be public or private.
Chair Anderson. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to clarify, is the waste processing facility taxed on the waste, or is it the person picking up that waste that's paying the tax? And second, are you assuming that tax is passed on to the facility from the hauler, and that's how you're paying that tax? Can you clarify that?
Mr. Steiner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, the tax isn't on the facility. The tax is for the service the facility provides. And so that gets passed back to the generator of the material in one way or the other, customer generator of the material. So if I'm responding to your question appropriately, the facility isn't being charged any tax. Who charges or remits the tax to the state depends on the waste hauler. They can file a form with Minnesota Department of Revenue called an ST-10 form that says that the hauler is remitting the tax direct to the state instead of the disposal facility. When the hauler doesn't bring it in, when a customer brings it in direct or a contractor, you know, whatever it would be, They usually don't file that on hand, and so then the disposal facility remits that to the state.
Representative Schultz? Any further questions for Mr. Steiner? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Steiner. We'll now go to, and there wasn't anyone else on behalf of the bill. We're going to someone with concerns. Mr. Carnival, please join us. Thank you, Mr. Steiner. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, McGranchy Carnival Law Firm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doug Carnival. I'm here today to represent the Minnesota chapter of the National Waste and Recycling Association, an industry association of waste haulers, recyclers, and waste processing facilities. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House File 2282. We appreciate the efforts of Representative Keel to capture additional solid waste tax revenue that is currently sent to the general fund, and our association has long held the belief, as stated in statute, that solid waste tax revenues should be used solely for waste purposes only. As you know, a portion now goes to the general fund as well. To that end, we've always supported increasing SCORE grants to counties, which are recycling grants, to provide more resources for reducing waste and recycling more materials from the waste stream. We would support legislation that fairly and equitably distributes additional solid waste tax revenue to the counties for recycling purposes. It should be noted that a major challenge is facing the current public and private recycling programs, and it's called the China National Sword Initiative, which has severely restricted imports of recycling commodities. These restrictions have significantly impacted municipal curbside programs and recycling facilities. Traditional recycling facilities, those that are processing curbside recycling, are struggling to survive in these market conditions. On March 1st, the Chinese government will lock out U.S. imports by limiting import licenses and setting extremely restrictive standards for contamination, a 0.5% contamination rate that recycling facilities are struggling to meet and most cannot meet. With these pending restrictions, domestic end markets have already been flooded and local government and private industry have already lost significant recycling revenue. We need additional SCORE money on the front end of recycling programs to support municipal recycling contracts and to help our private recyclers survive China's import restrictions. While House File 2282 uses the solid waste tax for solid waste purposes as we like, and would seem to be consistent with our association's overall position of getting more SCORE money to counties, we do, however, have questions regarding the amount of the revenue that the tax refunds will demand, whether they will be equally distributed, and what is the best use of these funds. Specifically regarding the bill, first, how much does this proposal cost? I see the revenue note as about $1.2 million for a biennium, which does not seem to be a tremendous amount of money, but what other state agency resources will be needed to implement this program? Will there need to be more staff at the Department of Revenue or at the MPCA to implement this program? Secondly, from a geographical standpoint, have there been any estimates made on where the tax refund will go, and how does this geographical distribution compare with the current SCORE grant funding and their distribution to counties? Is the distribution of these new tax refunds equitable, or do some counties fare better than others, and why? Third, given an analysis of where these tax refunds will be distributed, will these tax refunds support the municipal curbside collections and recycling processing programs that our state has already invested in at a time when they're needed most? And fourthly, we fully support greater diversion of recycling material, including organics from the waste stream. However, if tax refunds are going to be made, we would like landfills and recycling facilities of all types who also divert recycling materials from the waste stream to also be eligible to receive this tax fund. As an example, currently we are diverting from landfills wood waste, metals, and shingles. And for legislation to be equitable and fair, we believe language in the bill needs to specifically identify and reward diversion taking place at on landfills and recycling facilities, as well as those facilities in the bill. We'd also like to point out two precedent-setting solid waste policies in this bill. One, the use of combustion ash in roadways and the application of the tax refund for reuse purposes establishes a new policy for use of the solid waste tax. That's in lines 2.5 to 2.8. We don't currently classify road ash use as recycling, but reuse. Combustion ash and rose waste is not considered recycling in Minnesota, but is considered a beneficial use by the PCA. Beneficial use is not included in the calculation of the recycling rates and does not help us meet our state recycling goals, and we therefore believe it should not be eligible for the tax refund. Two, the solid waste tax is paid by homeowners, as Representative Hertas mentioned, and businesses at the point of generation. The taxes paid on solid waste services can be significant, even if these same businesses are recycling as much as possible. These taxpayers are not receiving the refund. The refund will go to a new universe of public and possibly private facilities that divert materials prior to disposal, but they do not pay the solid waste tax. The citizens pay the solid waste tax. In effect, the refund is really a SCORE distribution program to a new universe of recipients rather than through the traditional means of SCORE distribution through the formula set in statute. This is precedent-setting from a state solid waste policy standpoint and must be given careful consideration. Thank you for your time. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on this, and we look forward to working with you and Representative Keel in the future on this. Happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carnival. Questions for Mr. Carnival? Okay, thank you very much. I have Megan Kuhl-Stennis. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Megan Kuhl-Stennis, and I'm here representing Eureka Recycling. We are a nonprofit social enterprise and zero-waste organization based in Northeast Minneapolis. We collect and sort recyclables from all over the Twin Cities metro. Eureka Recycling has served the Twin Cities community for over 15 years. We have a materials recovery facility known as a MRF that sorts recyclables that the residents and businesses put out for recycling separate from their trash, known as source-separated materials. We sort these materials into over a dozen categories. Over 93% of what we sort actually gets recycled because of the community's sorting requirements and our staff's high sortation standards. Over 80% of the materials sold out of our MRF as raw materials stay right here in Minnesota and to be manufactured into new products. We respectfully oppose this bill, House File 2282, and appreciate the opportunity to speak. While support for pulling recyclable and compostable materials from the trash that is delivered to a garbage or mixed waste facility might seem like a good idea, in reality it is a bad environmental and economic practice. The current step tax structure that this bill is trying to change encourages separating materials at the source, the home or business, from the waste stream. Since we began recycling in Minnesota, this has been valued over incinerating and landfilling. Removing this tax in the form of a refund is a disincentive for the whole system to separate, beginning with the entities that own or would own these facilities. Some are private, but many are governmental facilities who are supposed to enforce the waste hierarchy. This is a disincentive for the very people and systems that should uphold the hierarchy. If this bill was enacted, recyclable materials will increasingly be seen as unusable by manufacturers that buy these secondary raw materials. Poor quality recyclables, or if they're contaminated, are proven to negatively impact the commodities market for these materials. This will hurt the cities that rely on the revenues from selling these materials, as well as the recyclers that collect source-separated materials from them and the manufacturers that need a consistent quality and supply. While we did not have enough time to contact all of our material buyers, the ones we did contact were very concerned, and one plastic end market, Bedford Technologies, shared a letter, I believe, hopefully you all have it, sent to this committee, that is a huge burden on them to pull out contaminants. Those contaminants include everything from other types of plastic to food waste and paper, and they rely on quality materials that are separated and delivered in a high-quality form to be able to make their products right here in Minnesota. They're actually based in Worthington, Minnesota. And as for the mixed waste composting, this has been tried and failed in Minnesota many times, costing the taxpayers a lot of money. Back in the 80s and 90s, when this was experimented, the product that was created could not be used as farmers didn't want it due to all the contamination. Personally, I'm also a gardener. I use compost at home to grow flowers and vegetables. I have seen compost that was poor quality, and it is clear to the eye that it was contaminated from glass and plastic pieces in it. I would not want to be gardening in that compost, nor would I want my son to be around it, and I sure wouldn't want to eat food grown in it. The incinerator ash, additionally, that they propose to receive another subsidy for is actually a hazardous substance and has not been confirmed, to be safe in road usage because of the levels of dioxin, heavy metals, and other inorganic substances in it. For these reasons, we respectfully ask you to oppose HF 2282. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for Ms. Cool Stennis? For members? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank
we
you.
Will now go to the department. Is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of or with concerns? Let's go to the department for their perspective. Mr. Cummings.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative Keelan, members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. This bill establishes a tax refund for waste-to-energy and waste-processing facilities. The refund, as you've heard, is based on tons of certain materials the facility has removed from the waste it processes and the tipping fees it charges. Waste that is sent to these facilities is a mix of residential and commercial waste, and the facilities will not know how much of the waste they process is commercial or residential, since the tax is collected by waste service providers. Self-haulers pay the commercial tax regardless of what kind of waste they bring to the landfill or transfer station. DOR currently does not collect any of the data necessary to calculate the refund, and this could create verification and audit issues. But if we just look outside the context of tax administration, this legislation would provide a refund to a non-taxpayer. If the goal is to give waste generators further incentive to recycle or limit items from the waste stream, this does not appear to accomplish that. In fact, it may do the opposite. If the purpose of the legislation is to provide an incentive or subsidy to these facilities, the committee may consider a grant program to provide that direct incentive. It is not clear from the legislation how facilities should calculate the tipping fee used in the calculation of the refund amount. The bill calls for the tipping fee in effect during the previous calendar year, but tipping fees can change throughout the year. We would like to work with the committee on the definition of waste processing facility. We think it could result in an additional 40 to 60 transfer stations in Minnesota, arguing they are waste processing facilities and thus eligible to claim this refund. If this bill moves forward, better definition could be provided so that it only includes the handful of facilities MPC designates to the Department of Revenue rather than another larger set of taxpayers. But if this bill moves through the process, Mr. Chair, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you, Representative Keel, and staff, and we thank you for the opportunity to come before the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Questions for Mr. Cummings from members? Thank you for your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Keel, or we'll have her make her closing comments here. Representative Keel?
I thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for hearing this and considering it. And certainly if there are other concerns or questions, I'm willing to work with whatever we need to do. So.
Thank you very much. Representative Grunhagen renews his motion that House File 2282 as amended be delivered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Keel. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Item next, we'll just go down the list here. Representative Pearson. So, members, we're now looking at House File 2099. And I will move House File 2099. Is the D, Representative Pearson, is the DE3 amendment yours?
It is.
Okay, so I will move the H2099 DE3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill before us as amended. Representative Pearson, welcome to the Tax Committee. To your bill, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
And members of the Tax Committee. Thank you for hearing this bill this morning on what recently has been dubbed possibly a solution to the most solvable problem in the state of Minnesota. We have a great facility that is outgrowing its current use, and we're looking for a new facility to be built, and this goes a long way to making that happen. So I have a testifier with me today, Rob Zeski, who can give you more information and answer specific questions on exempting the sales tax on the building materials that would be put into building this new facility.
Thank you, Representative Pearson. Is there anyone else wishes to testify on behalf of House File 299 as amended? Anyone with concerns? The department? Thank you, Mr. Cummings. So, you're it. Please state your name, and could you spell your last name for us, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rob Zeski. I'm the CEO of Second Harvest Heartland. Last name is Z, as in zebra, E-A-S-K-E.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Pearson. Thank you, committee. Delighted to be here this morning. Indeed, we are focused on a very important task for Minnesota, our neighbors. Last year, Second Harvest Heartland supported nearly 532,000 food insecure Minnesotans with fresh, nutritious food. And so we are talking a little bit about a new facility. Second Harvest Heartland is the state's largest hunger relief organization, and we have been in our current location since the mid-1980s, at which point in the mid-80s we distributed nearly 1 million pounds of food based on our records. This year we are on pace to distribute nearly 100 million pounds of food from that distribution facility. We have been supported through the decades with strong industry support from the likes of C.H. Robinson, Super Value, and others to make the most in bootstrapping our current location, but we are simply at capacity not only from our physical location, but also in the dramatic change in the type of food we distribute. Decades ago, that was boxes and cans. Last year, over 60% of what we distributed was fresh. Most of that was fresh fruits, vegetables, meat, and dairy, making sure that we are getting the healthiest foods to Minnesotans that we possibly can, has strained our existing facility beyond its capacity. So as we pursue and have just moving into a Brooklyn Park facility is our plan. This is a companion piece of work to general obligation bonding that we are looking at as well. There are three critical components of the of this project that I think make it quite unique. The first of these is the amount of statewide representation that this program and facility represents. Second Harvest Heartland food is distributed to all 87 counties in Minnesota. We represent among food shelves and local hunger relief organizations roughly 75% of the food that gets distributed through that network. Increasingly, as I said, that is fresh fruits and vegetables and perishable material. While generally it would be easier and cheaper to kind of focus our issues on the metro, we are not only obligated by moral dictates, but also by contract through our work with Feeding America to make sure that we are equitably distributing product in every single county that we serve. So we make sure that we distribute that product across Minnesota's counties, not just in Hennepin, but to make sure it's in Sherburne and McLeod and Lincoln County, so that we can make sure every Minnesotan is supporting that. That is one critical piece. We are truly the backbone of hunger relief in the state of Minnesota. The second important feature of this project is it comes with immense financial leverage. While we're seeking $18 million in general obligation funds, we are going to match that nearly 3-to-1 for the project itself. But the magic of Second Harvest Heartland's work and the work of the nonprofit hunger relief system is that it's driven by a massive amount of private support. So in our first year, we are expecting that we will be matching that $18 million state support with over $15 million of private donation funds. Those are from small donors, typically $100 and less to support our work, but also with $100 million worth of donated food. That comes from food drives, that comes from corporate partners, that comes from grocery stores, and it comes from America's farmers and Minnesota's farmers in particular. We match that work with over 140,000 hours of volunteer time from 40,000 volunteers just last year alone. And so as we think about this opportunity, we know that it's supported by businesses, faith-based groups, schools. It's supported by industry and agriculture because this is a very important leverage point for us to rally the community, engage them in service, repack our food, and make sure that we are getting that to our neighbors in need. Keep in mind that our work is overwhelmingly philanthropic. philanthropically supported. Over 80% of our funding comes from nonprofit sources. We don't have ticket sales. We don't charge admission fees. We don't have membership or tuition or rent. This really comes from support from our community. In addition to that financial leverage, the third feature that I think is really unique for us is the urgency that we're facing. After 30 years of focusing on doing what we can with our current building, all of our partners in industry agree that it's time for us to be in a new location. The USDA estimates that on an average year, Minnesota farmers produce but leave in fields or harvest but don't get to market over 200 million pounds of consumable vegetable products. Our work is in making sure that we are getting those items, and they're waiting for us every year to get those in the hands of our kids, our school kids who need that for healthy growth and development, for senior citizens who are more likely to spend more time in the hospital if they're not well fed, and for many Minnesotans who are struggling to stay on a healthy path. We know this is an issue, according to the University of Minnesota, not only of human dignity and the dignity of our Minnesota neighbors, but also one of health care and education. They estimate that we spend $1.6 billion every year in Minnesota on downstream costs from food insecurity. So in addition to this being a fantastic place of compassion, fantastic place to express our dignity for our neighbors, this is also an issue of economic import, and we're excited to be a leverage point not only for good, but also for the economy of Minnesota as we help to stave off costs to our education and healthcare systems through this work.
Thank you, Mr. Zeski. Questions for members for Mr. Zeski? Okay, with that, would you like to? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your testimony and the work that you're doing. I know we have an amendment here that we're going to get to. And my question is more technical than for the testifier. I was just wondering if you could explain.
Representative Wills, the bill is amended.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah. You were too quick for me.
Oh, no. Do you have a question to the amended bill, or?
Well, I was just curious on, and I apologize, I should have asked when we were adopting, but the change in why we're going to doing a refund as opposed to the upfront exemption.
Excuse me. You go ahead.
Just don't.
Mr. Chair, Representative, traditionally these are always done as refunds. The only real change in the Delete Everything Amendment in terms of the refund is, as the bill was originally drafted, each of the contractors or subcontractors would have to individually apply for a refund for all of their purchases. And now what will happen is all of them will just report to Second Harvest Heartland, and then Second Harvest Heartland will directly get the refund.
Representative Wills.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification on the process.
Thank you, Representative Wills. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. Yeah, thanks for your testimony and for the great work that you do. But just to, you know, have you looked at acquiring a used facility? There's quite a few vacated commercial buildings or warehouses around. Or is there something special that has to be built brand new? The way it looks from the summary here, it'll be in Hennepin County. And so I don't know. That's just an initial thought.
Mr. Zeski.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. We have indeed gotten title to an existing building. So that is exactly what we have done. So this is to rehabilitate that building. As you would expect, we have a lot of very specific needs as we think about the volunteer engagement as well as the refrigeration and freezer and ambient temp work that we will be using. But that's exactly the plan that we will be doing. That was indeed found to be the cheapest path to get us to where we wanted to go. Thank you.
Representative Grunhagen. Thank you. Other member questions? Okay, if you'd like to wrap it up, Representative Pearson.
Next time I come before you, I'll try to bring something less controversial, but I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. I will renew my motion at House File 2099 as amended later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Mr. Zeski. Thank you, Representative Pearson.
Thank you.
Item next and item last. Representative Petersburg moves House File 2421. And is the A1 amendment, Representative Backer, is that yours?
It is. It is, Chair.
Okay, so Representative Petersburg moves the H2421A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. So now we have the bill before us as amended. So with that, if you could please present your bill, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Chair and members. This bill got started about 2 years ago. The number one lobbyist for this bill was my father. One of the things that my father reminds me about every month when I return home, or almost every week now when I'm home, he comes in, he helps me out with my businesses. He goes, you know, electricity in our society is as important as food and water, especially not just in greater Minnesota, but all parts of the state. And if you live in a township, when electricity goes out, you don't have water. Your pumps don't run. Let's just think about the last time you were without electricity. I remember the last time I was, and it was in the morning, and quite frankly, I wasn't able to do my hair. So it was. There was a little shine on the top there. But on the serious note, back in 2005 was actually the worst time our community was without electricity. We had a significant ice storm, and right after Thanksgiving, if some of you remember that, there was many parts of Minnesota without electricity. We were without electricity for 5 days. Obviously, it was cold, so we didn't have to worry about cooling, but back then we had to worry about heating. Last year, July 4th, we had a major storm come through, and we didn't have electricity for over a day or two, and we didn't have cooling. What else is electricity used for? Cooking food. Public safety, manufacturing. And if you stop and think of it, just this morning when you all got up, including myself, just to get here, how many times we needed electricity. In your packet, you have a handout. One handout shows you about sales tax exemption on electricity on our surrounding states. As you can see, North Dakota does not have tax sales tax on electricity. And then there's, with the help of Pulse Research, we filled in some other blanks. Now, currently in the state of Minnesota, we do not have sales tax on all forms of electricity. There is some exemption. I'm looking to have that exemption for all residential and all commercial and industrial. For example, right now, sales tax is exempt in Minnesota if you have electricity as your primary heat source for your homes from November to April. We also have an exemption of sales tax in industrial production and other data centers and so forth. What my bill does is it removes sales tax on electricity across the board just for the simple reason from a it's a really a regressive tax, because as a person gains in their wealth, proportionally, you do not see the increase in your taxes. So with that said, and also currently right now, we generate, and make sure I'm correct on this, right now we generate right around $275 million a year for the budget. Is that right, Mrs. Dalton, on sales tax? And most of that, 60% of that right now are individuals with homes, residential, and then 40% are with businesses, government, and nonprofit. So with the average electrical bill for residential is around $90 a month, that means year taxes around $85. The average electrical bill in Minnesota for businesses that are non-industrial is $565 a month. So that's a tax of $470 a year. It would make us more competitive, and would it take us out of that regressive tax. With that, I will turn over to my testifier.
Okay. First of all, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? Any with concerns? The department?
Not at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. I mean, I thank you that you're not testifying, because you all have testimony, but thank you for your answer. Yeah. Okay. So What we're going to do here is we're going to take the testimony here, and so please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Lauren Lantuck with Otter Tail Power Company in Fergus Falls, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
My company is the smallest investor-owned utility in the state of Minnesota. I think we're the second smallest investor-owned utility in the nation. We are OTTR on the NASDAQ. And we serve western Minnesota, northeast South Dakota, and eastern North Dakota. What I'm going to say today, I think, applies to all of the utilities, but I don't pretend to be representing all of the utilities, electric utilities, as I sit here. We are what we call a convenient tax collector, both for the state of Minnesota and for the counties, the school districts, and the townships. And so we are, for example, the largest payers of property tax in the state of Minnesota. And the personal property tax is unique to utilities, and that's been addressed in other venues, and we're working on a revision of that. We are the only entities that pay personal property tax. We also perform collection of sales tax on all of our electric sales, except for some of the exemptions that Representative Backer pointed out. So for every $100 of a bill that a customer has, almost $7 of that is electricity sales tax. If you look at the statute, 297A.67, again, the exemptions Representative Backer pointed out, residential electric heat is deemed to be an exemptable activity, so it does not currently pay sales tax. The electric heat is actually very common in greater Minnesota. And in apartment buildings all over the state of Minnesota, it's a low cost to install, and it's easy for property owners to administer. In there's another exemption for the materials used and consumed in industrial production, as Representative Backer pointed out. And I'll just offer one small nuance to that. We serve two pipelines in the state of Minnesota. One pays sales tax, one does not. One is deemed to be just a common carrier taking oil through the state, and so they pay 6.875% sales tax on all of their electricity purchases. The other pipeline is deemed to be an intake for oil serving the refinery down in Rosemount. And so because it's thus in industrial production, the sales of electricity to that pipeline are not are exempt from electric sales tax. And then the finally, the exemption for materials used in providing taxable services. So if you're opening a beauty salon, I would assume that all the chairs, the mirrors, all the equipment you have to buy to stock your salon, those would be tax exempt since you're providing a service. I'll add that state and federal electric accounts are also exempt. So as Representative Backer pointed out, this bill would make exempt all of those sales. In some respects, it would make our job a bit easier. We would be collecting one less tax on behalf of the state. And every utility in the state, as we sit here, has someone on the phones back at their facilities who are talking to customers about paying their bills. And customers are not aware that almost 7% of that is a result of the state sales tax. Mr. Chair, that's all I've got. I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a personal question. I've got the house I bought has one very large room, 440 square feet, that the previous owner added as an addition, and that's heated electrically. The rest of the house, which would be the largest part of the house, is heated with gas. You just commented that's why it's a personal question. Am I paying a sales tax then on heating that room or not? And how would I get that corrected if it needed to be?
Let's go to Ms. Dalton on that.
I'm not about to introduce a personal bill, but I'm just kind of curious.
I do it all the time.
Because I get one bill from I'm in the Excel service area, but I get one bill for my electric, and here I've joked that that room probably costs me a small fortune to heat, even though it's well insulated. I looked into
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, you only get the exemption for the 5 months of the year if it is the primary.
The exemption for what?
You only get the exemption on electricity used for heating if it is the primary source of heating in your residence. So just because you have electric baseboard heat in one room, which I also have in one of my bathrooms, or you use a space heater, that would not get you the exemption. It has to be the primary source of heat.
Chair Carlson.
Well, then I haven't been being overcharged, it sounds like, at least under the rules. Yeah, thank you.
Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Backer. I noticed that you provide the benefit during the major heating months only to people who use electric heat, and yet your arguments were about, you know, that this is a regressive tax and this would, you know, make housing more affordable, et cetera, for people. And, you know, I think most of the regional centers and most of the metro area use natural gas. And it seems to me that if we're going to give a break on reducing heating bills, we ought to do it for all fuel types, which I'm sure would add to the fiscal load of your bill. But could you explain why you're just targeting it to electric users?
Yes, Chair and members. Electricity is used for air conditioning. You know, I'm referring to heating, but in the summer months, we don't use electricity. Electricity for heating, we're using it for cooling and lights and other operations. So that's why I was focusing on electricity, because electricity is something that we use 12 months out of the year, every single day, and not heating 12 months out of the year. So we had to start someplace, and that's where I started. Good question. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was focusing particularly on lines 110 to 115, and there's a very different treatment of people during the winter months, and that's when everybody, I think, has their highest utility bills, just because we live in Minnesota, unless you're totally addicted to air conditioning and have an inefficient house. Maybe you can do more in the summer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you should also take a look at Clause 2 right above it. There is exactly the existing exemption for 5 months of the year is for people who use natural gas for their primary source. And anybody who is using fuel, coal, wood, any of that, they have an exemption on those purchases year-round. So all of the fuels used for heating are exempt for that five-month period right now.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. I understand that for right now. I just think we should look broadly if we're going to go forward to help reducing bills.
I was just looking at the revenue note here, and with those types of numbers, I was thinking maybe we could do June accelerated on this.
Unless you want to do July.
Representative Drazkowski, then Graffler. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, Representative Backer, this is written broadly. It exempts it for all electricity, from what I understand. I'm wondering, the testifier, and I forgot his name again, but I'm wondering, can you tell us what does it cost your company to administer the sales tax?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, the administrative cost for administering the sales tax, it's another line on the bill, so as long as it takes the programmers to build that into the programming billing system for all of the utilities, that would be the time necessary to do that. We collect the money, and we would then interact with the state, and we would, I would assume, send the Department of Revenue a check on a monthly basis or weekly basis for that amount of money. Cost of that, sir, I don't know.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Graffalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Dalton, are you familiar with how we treat self-generators with regards to sales tax and electricity?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Graffalo, I actually got asked that question this summer, and I know that I know the answer, but I can't come up with it off the top of my head. I believe that right now there is no sales tax charged to them. They get essentially, if you are self-generating, you are not charged use tax for having generated your own tax. That just isn't charged sales tax at all.
And Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I'm just wondering, I'm looking at current statutes, and I don't see where that exemption is in statute. Do you know where the Department of Revenue's interpretation of that came from? Or is that a question for the Department of Revenue?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would actually ask you to take that to the Department department about that.
I think maybe Chair Garofalo. That's okay. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. Thank you.
Any other questions for members? Okay, if you'd like to wrap it up, Representative Backer.
Yes, just closing. This, again, electricity is such an important part of our life, just like food and water. This bill would approximately save residential homeowners, apartment owners, $85 a year, which they could use for other in other items, and for businesses that are non-industrial, $470 a year. So I appreciate your time and would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Backer. And before we get into the motion here, I would like to announce that on Thursday, March 1st, that'd be like tomorrow, regular meeting time, the bills will be a Rosenthal bill, House File 2339, Drazkowski 2033, Garofalo 46, Metza 2296. So with that, Representative Petersburg renews his motion that House File 2421 as amended be laid out for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. So with that, members, thank you for your work today. I really appreciate it. Good government all the time. We